woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Holley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures up 40. We got the Dow. I'm sure the Dow is. I'm engrossed in this $250 million bill that we passed yesterday. When I say we, I guess that would be the...
Yeah, do you have a mouse in your pocket?
Yeah, you have a mouse in your pocket, as they say.
Yeah, what you mean, we?
Yeah. Hey, buddy, you got a mouse in your pocket? The individual stacks, we've got the Clovis going up again today. It's the CLOV, which is the latest, is up $4, trading $25.98. I was trying to put some stuff on it here yesterday, and I did not. Nobody in this kind of world wants to do with like 3- and 4-way spreads anymore, Kevin. The knuckleheads. The
it's no fun anymore.
There's no fun anymore.
Can't have a good time.
No, but the I really can't think of anything more dangerous than people thinking that they long term more dangerous than thinking if they just get a bunch of people together and start buying something that they can power the price past any kind of normal I would call value and just stick it to people. And make a whole bunch of money, and they will never be the last man standing. I mean, because the problem is, what if you're the last man standing? And I don't think that even crosses people's minds, does it? Somebody has to buy the top, and it could be
probably
you.
Doesn't. There's a supreme confidence, perhaps an overconfidence, that you can get out at the right time. If you're the one engineering it, you probably can. Just like any Ponzi scheme, as long as you know where to get out, you're okay. As long as you don't get caught too, but that's another issue.
Well, but when you start seeing articles like we talked about last week, where the person who made all that money in AMC was considered a moron because he got out too early, boy, when you start getting that sort of mentality, that's again, these are not any kind of trading things. I mean, it's not like the idea that you can think that a stock is too cheap or too expensive at 9 in the morning and sell it or buy it based on your knowledge, even if you're right, even if you're correct in your analysis, the idea that by the end of the day the rest of the world is going to come around to your way of thinking, I mean, that's a tough one, right? I don't think they
get you. Well, except that, as a general rule, the rest of the world should come around to my way of thinking.
Well, sure, but the problem there is eventually, I mean, the guy who was on, I always come back to the guy who was on way, way, way back, long before John and I even did a show. I mean, I'm talking years. I was still on the trading floor, and so was he. We did a, sort of like the sports writers on TV, we did a traders on TV, although the only TV we were on was in Rockford, of all places. We went over to...
Cigars? We have cigars, too?
We didn't have cigars. They wouldn't let us in the studio. We went over to Weigel Broadcasting. Remember that place, Manny?
I do, yeah.
I remember Weigel.
And his son, right, that had the broadcasting studio over in Halston?
I don't know who owned it or who ran it. It must have been.
Because they had... remember Channel 26 did their full-day... business news out of there, and remember the homework show? They did that out of the basement. The city ponied up for they had a homework show for the young kids coming back from Chicago Public Schools. There was a show that kind of went through some of the homework for the day. I think it was on Channel 9. It might have been on 26. They did that in the basement. Then E-Trade Radio was out of there. Remember Jack Taylor, and there was a bunch of guys. Claude Renz. They did stuff all day long. And it was a kind of a before Bloomberg TV. And it was kind of a competitor to CNBC in the early days. It was local. And anyway, we went over there and we did this. I wonder if we even have some of those tapes. But it was Jan and me and this guy Benji Schwartz, who was kind of nuts from the. See, I owned a clearing firm over at the CME, but real bright guy. And this other guy, some Armenian name, I forget the guy's name, but he was his parents. His dad had just died, but they owned a construction company. Family had a construction company forever. He, you know, fell into the construction company. He knew all about construction. Matter of fact, he built some big four flat and sold the other condos and got his for free, like right near us, Manny. I mean, the guy's no dummy, and he had, shall we say, an exceptionally attractive wife. So he decides he's going to manage the family money, which was significant, and his own, which he had some. So he decides he's going to short this tenant healthcare, which is now, I believe, in the Dow. No, it's not, but it's still one of the bigger. They're, you know, the insurance, not insurance companies, but they do. What are they? What are they? Kevin, are the they're in the healthcare industry. I know that, and I think they do it. I think they're pharmacy benefit, but I'm not positive. But he dug out that there was something, you know, amiss in the company. I forget what the hell it was, but it had something to do with the numbers. But he did a lot of research, and he's convinced this place is worth like $5. So it's trading, you know, 40 or 30. So he starts shorting it. He wasn't buying puts or anything. He's just shorting it. Stock's creeping up. I think they finally carried him and his family money out at about 65. And sure enough, 6 months later, the stock was like 6. With all these investigations going on and everything. But he was gone. You know, it was just, I mean, he was absolutely right, but he was gone. You know, and so it's a lesson to be learned. You know, that even if you are correct, being early, I mean, there's nothing that says the timing is when you find it. Because the whole idea is you had to do all that research. You're the only one doing it. Nobody else is. And finally, one day, somewhere, it's going to happen, or there's going to be an indictment comes down, and all of a sudden, oh, yeah, I knew about that. Well, they didn't really. So, I mean, you really have to be careful, even when you worry about the Fed stuff here. I mean, I have a pretty good feeling on where it's going to end. But that doesn't mean you just spend your money and your clients' money by just going short today. I mean, you just don't do that. I mean, there's going to be...
Well, and that's, you know, that's true of just about any kind of transaction, innovation, anything. Is timing is everything. There's been a lot of examples over history of, people with the right product at the wrong time. And you roll it out and the market's not ready for it. And, you know, away you go. And, you go under, and 5 years later, someone else comes along and says, okay, you know, let's try it now. And it is all about timing. So, you know, it's one thing to see trends, and like you said, there's a lot of people. You know, I feel like I can see trends, but can I tell you exactly when? No.
No, it's by the way, there's a study for those that are worried about, you know, showing their badges that they were vaccinated and so forth. A study came out yesterday by the Cleveland Clinic, and I'm just quoting this. I'm not making policy. It says, no vaccine needed for those who've had COVID-19, Cleveland Clinic says. Now, they're not saying forever, just like if you have a vaccine, they're not saying it's going to last forever. The Cleveland Clinic recently studied the effectiveness of COVID-19 vaccination among people who caught the virus and among those who haven't. The study finds that anyone who previously tested positive for a SARS, COVID-19, did not get additional benefits from the vaccine, which suggests the vaccine should be prioritized to people who haven't gotten the infection. Which now I guess there's enough vaccine, but clinic says this research provides insight into how the immune system protects the body. During a study that was conducted on 52,000 employees, the Cleveland Clinic says not a single incidence of SARS infection was observed in previously infected participants or with or without vaccinations. So, 52,000, it's way more people than they use for the, these vaccinations, right? In the double blind test.
Yes, and so how many people have you heard say, we won't achieve herd immunity until 70% of the population is vaccinated?
Right. when we think, what do we figure, 35-40% of the population's already had it in some areas,
right?
For
now,
sure.
There's some overlap in the two, yes. So it's not you know, if you say we're I think it's like 63% of the U.S. population has had at least the first round of the vaccination. So if you believe that the vaccination is what's necessary, and you think a third of the population has had it and 63% have had it, then the question is, what's the overlap? How many vaccinated people have had it? But your chances are that there is at least there's at least 7% that don't fall into both categories. So,
well, they're still recommending that those
and yet I hear really, you know, people who should be really, really considered really smart people saying this over and over and again.
Well, they do say, they go on, they say, still recommend that those eligible receive the vaccine. And I think that is probably makes sense, because, I mean, a lot of people had the COVID, it's 14, 16 months ago. And that's, I would say that if you had the vaccine, if it was available 16 months ago, the question should be, when do you need round two? I mean, how long is it going to last, right? So if somebody had the COVID 4 months ago, I mean, I'm pushing it. I'm getting like 7 or 8 months. So I'm thinking I'm going to get the vaccine somewhere probably next month. I mean, because I don't want to have a period.
Well,
I
don't understand the fervor of the push for it. For people who've already had it, because we know that there is a long-lasting immunity from it, because, you know, they keep testing people. They keep testing people for immunities who had it early on. So, you know, we're not to that part yet. And then by the same token, this push now to get it into children, I don't understand, because they are, you know, even if they get it, it tends to be not serious at all if they show any symptoms in the first place. So, you know, these are things that don't make sense to me. There is, and I don't have an explanation. I'd love to know, you know, what's behind this fervor to do it.
I think that in defense of where the theys, whoever the theys are going, I think they're a little afraid that this new variant is at least infecting younger people a lot more. Now, you're right, they're still not dying, but I think they'd like to have something there to block that. That's to me what I hope they're thinking. I mean, I don't know what else they could be thinking.
Well, except you see, you know, Tom, that you I'm seeing crazy use of statistics. So as an example, you're saying things like, well, we have to vaccinate young people because they've become a higher percentage of the cases. Wait a minute. If you vaccinate nearly two-thirds of all the adults and they stop getting it, and you haven't vaccinated children and they are getting it at the same rate that they always have, which is hardly at all, then, yeah, the way math works is that becomes a higher percentage of cases.
Kevin, we don't do math.
But the number of cases isn't increasing.
We don't do so math anymore.
There is this drive to, you know, to bastardize statistics to make the case. Why?
Why is that any different? As I used to say in the trading floor, why is Y a crooked letter? If you can answer that question, you can answer this one to me. When is the first person from a firm that raises prices going to just come on TV and say, because I can, because other people did, and I felt I was being shortchanged, I needed to charge more, instead of giving some long, bleeding heart story about the supply chain, or you had to pay somebody a dollar more an hour, or some other BS? Just saying. You can make a case.
But then I'll ask, okay, why did we suppress news about treatments, alternative treatments that work, and why was there an all-out battle against it? Was that so that the vaccines could get emergency use?
Emergency use authorization.
Let me put it this way: I have no trust in the pharmaceutical industry.
Oh God,
I think they have earned that skepticism.
Well, what about this week? They've got one that. They just came out with this Alzheimer drugs, which, of course, everybody in the world hopes works. It has marginal testing compared to other stuff, but it's $56,000 a year. That now we got to figure out who's going to pay for it, and we don't even know if it costs these guys, you know, $10 a year for that treatment, or $52,000. There's no concept of cost in there whatsoever. I mean, this is the we're totally
well, and we know it with push on dangerous drugs like oxycodone and fentanyl, and we know what have we learned from the Fauci email dump, that there was a scramble to obfuscate facts, you know, because people were freaked out that, well, basically they wanted to cover up the notion that they actually funded the research at the lab in Wuhan.
Well, so, Kevin, I think that
all of this whole medical establishment has just been so corrupt that I question everything they do, and that may mean that the vaccine, you know, you can rationally decide that getting vaccinated is the right thing to do. There's a lot of rational conclusions you can make that are that they're advocating that people make, but I mean, making that without, you know, a healthy skepticism and a proven attitude.
Well, I think we've talked about on the show. I mean, we've never talked about the subject. I don't know if we've dealt with it head on, but we sort of have. I mean, the whole in this world we live in, and probably the world it's always been, it's not, you know, what people say, it's what people believe. And the spin has always been somewhat important. And the people who were probably most effective, and that is what they did in, you know, government, the people who were most effective got ahead of the spin and controlled the, at least to their extent, they controlled the conversation as far as they were concerned. And they ended up being amazingly successful, one guy like for a while. Hitler did that. Roosevelt did that. He got on radio himself on every Sunday night or Saturday night, whatever it was, and he didn't get involved in this, and he told people what he wanted to tell them. Now, I think he was mostly truthful. I mean, he clearly was a little bit obfuscating when he talked about the Lend-Lease Act and how they were helping the British before there was any sort of a declared war or anything. But the immense amount of... There's always different sides of looking at this. You look at what Fauci did or didn't do, and I've been a critic the whole way through. But then I also look at the man was getting 2,000 emails a day, and the amount of pressure that was allowed to get to him by people that have amazing amount of power in this country. I mean, you can't slam the phone down on the Pfizer guy, much as you'd like to, because he's paid off every friggin' guy in the federal government and half the people in the state now. They're getting down to that level. I mean, they're so you can't just be in that job and say I would love to. Okay, you couldn't get on the much as again I would love to. You couldn't get on the board of the CBOE like I was and say I'm not going to put up with any of Goldman Sachs' shenanigans. Okay, talk about one man being on an island. I mean, this stuff is so entrenched, Kevin, that it forces you to deal with it. It's, I mean, it just does. I mean, I don't know when the golden age of, journalism was. Maybe when Woodward and those guys were around. I don't know. I don't know enough about journalism. I wish we had, somebody who was a historian. Maybe Eric probably is. But the amount of pressures that are on all these people and all this stuff, and now there's this belief that no matter who you are, Lori Lightfoot comes out of nowhere, all of a sudden she can hold on to the truth. And I'm not picking on it. It sounds like I am, but every one of these people now thinks that they're the sole custodian of, quote, the truth. And they'll parcel out pieces that they think we can handle. Where did that come from? And yet, by the same token...
Well, that's wrong, but that's not exactly the same as intentional cover-up of wrongdoing, too. So you have...
Right.
You know, it's multifaceted. You know, there is that, I'm the great philosopher king, and I know what's good for everybody, which I don't accept that either. But then when it comes to saying, oh my God, we're going to get exposed, we have to cover this up, and we have to, basically organize and threaten, including threatening the lives of anybody who rocks that boat, that's not, that's what we're seeing.
Well, I mean, as much as, I love you and Carl, I don't believe it. If it was my choice to make between making vaccinations immediate as fast as we can available and try and talk people into getting them, to compare that with with a drug that once you get in a hospital, you help it helps people out. I don't think there's any comparison. I'll go with the vaccinations every time.
How about a drug that keeps you out of the hospital?
Well, if we had one, I mean, I don't know if we did.
Yes.
I mean,
there's plenty of study on it, so yeah. Look up Eastern Virginia Medical School. They've had the protocol out since late last spring.
If there's that much of a cover up, I don't necessarily think, not that I couldn't be persuaded by you two gentlemen, that if somebody showed up with COVID and already infected a whole bunch of people, that even if you gave him penicillin at that point and it cured him, I don't think that was a solution for something where people give it to other people.
Their protocol was that you treat the patient, you treat everybody around them, whether they've shown symptoms or not.
Whether we had to do all the BS we did and tell the lies to get the vaccine, I think we're still better off with the vaccine. And the idea that we have a law that says we couldn't pay for the vaccine because something else was effective. Kevin, but these people don't pay attention to any laws. Nobody does. You know, the law is for the other guy, right? Today.
Yes, I agree with you, which takes me back to my skepticism of the pharmaceutical industry.
Well, I mean, go down to Dan Ryan. The speeding laws are for the other guy, not for you. The government is a reflection of what we've become. The government spends money and doesn't care where they get it. Half the people in this country do the same thing. They're not going to vote for somebody who wants a balanced budget. They don't have one themselves. I mean, it's not like the government doesn't reflect what we are.
I'm not sure how that addresses my skepticism.
Oh, you think I'm less skeptical than you? I mean, I'm zero more.
Oh,
more
yeah, I sort of do.
Well, I'm more toward the numbers side of it. Follow the money. Wherever there's more dough, that's where they're going. I mean,
I agree with you. I agree with you. I don't know that that's necessarily in everybody's best interest.
But it's in the people,
especially when we are looking at an industry that has invested heavily in a technology, has not been able to successfully apply it to anything worthwhile, and is seizing the moment to say, "Well, we can we have an opportunity here to get a widespread rollout."
A drug looking for a disease?
mRNA technology.
Imagine that, a drug looking for a disease.
Never had a successful trial with it.
You're talking about the Alzheimer's.
The mRNA technology.
Oh, okay. Well, they happen to walk into a disease that it seems to work for. They were lucky they got this COVID thing.
Right, but that was never the problem. The problem was always the side effects, and as a different example, the claim in their filing that the spike protein would reside in the muscles and wouldn't go anywhere else, only to learn that the spike protein is now been found in the bloodstream and may be tied into the clotting issues that people have had.
Oh, I will. You'll never get me to say that a drug only does one thing, because I don't think they do. I mean, there's always something else they do, right? Question is it bad bad enough for you not to take it? I mean, it's one of those things. But you were gonna mention. I'm talking about shifting gears here. You were gonna mention the money. By the way, a huge discussion came up last night as I ran into a couple of baseball mavens. They are absolutely in denial of Major League Baseball losing the amount of money they said they lost last year. They're convinced that it's, talk about BS, Kevin. They're convinced that it's the usual routine now, that money you think you should have made is actual losses, unlike the rest of us who losses mean losses. And they think that like the $200 million the Sox claim they lost is just $200 million they normally would have made and didn't.
MLB said they lost $3.1 billion in 2020.
That's what I'm talking about. Do you guys believe it? That it's actual loss?
Well, I want to see the accounting. I want to see what's off the books.
Yeah, I mean, because those guys are trying to go through the numbers mentally last night, and I was having trouble. I mean, I don't really remember. They ended up paying 60 games with nobody there, and then they got some kind of a cut from the union, right, Manny? They got they only paid people for, what, 60? Pro rata, they paid him for like a third of a year. They didn't pay anybody in the minor leagues.
And they laid off a ton of people as well.
Yeah.
And apparently it translated to around $100 million per club in losses.
Yeah, I just wonder
the
if
Cubs. The Cubs say they lost $140 million.
I thought the Sox were on board for like $200 million, or that was their official number, or was it the Twins? One of the two. One of my clients.
So here would be your question, and maybe this is not the perfect example, just because we're talking about something that just started up last year. But let's just say, for argument's sake, that the Marquee Network was very profitable. Then the question is, did the Cubs lose money, but the Marquee Network made money?
Well, that's it. That's where you got to go with this.
So that's part of the question here, is what's on book and what's off book.
Yeah, I'd say you're right.
Not to mention that the teams, I mean, Forbes comes out every year with the sports team values. And as an asset, they've appreciated every year.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's say you lost $100 million because you had no fans. Okay, I could buy that. But if the value of the organization went up $100 million, did you really lose anything?
Well, yeah, that's another. Well, I mean, do you have the cash? I mean, that's another issue. The Cubs have $200 million that they can just plain lose. I mean, what's his name? Reinsdorf said that he lost a lot of money by not taking the Sox out of town. But he's never had a losing year. But in his mind, he's lost. Which, S&P Futures up 1, NASDAQ Futures up 37. I'm Tom Howie. Mr. Matt Weber. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You could reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 $1.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, Norbert Bank, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Thomas, Brent Weber on the board. S&P futures up 75 cents. 75 cents, but very quiet the last few days. NASDAQ futures up 31, Dow futures down 32. Individual stocks in the Dow causing that. Well, Goldman Sachs down $1.85, so I guess that's the culprit. But nothing much going on there. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 87. That's 0.6%. FTSE down 39.6%. CAC around only down 4. So that's unchanged. Just a review of yesterday. Dow was down 30, S&P futures up 74 cents, NASDAQ futures up 43, and yes, it was a boring day. Asia, Nikkei down 102.3%, but again, one's up, and Shanghai is up 11.3%, Hang Seng down 38, call that flat. So they've been seesawing over there as well. Bonds, 1.50, so the 10-year rate is going down, not up. Even the talk of all the inflation, it's 2 basis points down. The Bund, which made it to minus 0.09 on its way to being above ground, now is back down to minus 0.25. Japan, minus 0.0, or positive 0.07, so they're going down as well, which is, again, sort of counter what you would think. Oil up 28 cents, 70.33, so back up over 70 on West Texas Intermediate. Brent up 33 cents, 72.55. Natural gas down a penny, 3.11. RBOB up a penny, 2.22. We've got gold down $1, 1893, so still hanging right around, can't quite stay over the 1900 number, but, I'm still long it, in some of the gold, miners, because if it does go up another dollar, the gold miners traditionally have gone up more than the 5%, so they don't, but, anyway, that's what my research says, and you know, sometimes research is good, sometimes not so good. Copper down 5 cents, 449. And we've got crypto, Bitcoin up 1,834,692 as they stay, well, recently stay within this 30,000 to 36,000-hour range, but violently in the range. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, another shooting, 83rd and Halsted.
So yeah, we'll get to that in a second. 41 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a pretty good start here on a Wednesday morning. No major issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower and Stevenson looking good as well after a very busy morning yesterday, but off to a decent start here. Southside expressways are quiet, and same for Lakeshore Drive. Off the expressways, as Chief mentioned, a major police activity at 83rd and Vincennes on the south side. Apparently, early this morning, shots were fired at and by police in an incident at 83rd and Vincennes. SWAT is on the scene, and the suspect apparently is barricaded or was barricaded inside 8329 South Kerfoot after reportedly shooting two other people before police arrived. So I don't know if that's an ongoing incident. It's reading as if it's still ongoing, but it certainly happened early this morning.
You know what that corner is famous for, Manny?
I do not.
Yeah, you do. You did one of the best things you've ever done on the show is you gave a full report on the murder of Benji Wilson.
And oh, yeah.
It was that corner.
That was right there, yeah. Outside of Simeon, right?
Yep.
That's right. Yep. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, it's going to be another beautiful June day. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 75. Right now it's clear and 73 degrees downtown, so we'll hang right around here in the low to mid-70s all day. Warmer inland. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 103. Right now it's clear and 73. In sports, White Sox fell behind early, but rallied and pulled away from Toronto, beating the Blue Jays 6-1. Cubs had no issues with the Padres last night. They're now 4-1 against San Diego this season after blowing out them, the Padres 7-1. Diamondbacks keep losing. They lost to the A's 5-2. And NBA basketball for our Phoenix listeners, game 2 tonight in the Western Conference semifinals between the Suns and the Nuggets. Suns lead that series 1-0. That'll tip off at 6:30 p.m. Arizona time tonight. And the Nuggets are without their second-best player, who tore his ACL. Jamal Murray is out for the remainder of the playoffs. So everything lining up for the Suns to make a deep run here. Chief.
Did we decide Canada did something regarding this hockey?
Who's was this? It's in the semifinal round. Somebody from up there has to play somebody from here, right?
Which this is the semifinal round. Well, unless you're talking about the conference finals, which you could also call the semifinals because that would be Final Four.
Yeah, that would be the conference finals. Yeah. Somebody has to.
So that would be the next round after this current one.
Yeah, somebody has to come here.
Right. And I read Benetti and Stone were talking last night that the Blue Jays are returning. They're playing their last game in Buffalo. I want to say like July 15th or July 11th or something like that, and then they're going back to Toronto.
Okay. Well, they got a good team, right?
Yeah, they're solid. They're above 500. I don't know if they're a playoff team because that division's really tough with the Rays and the Red Sox, and then you have a feeling the Yankees aren't going to go away. But the Blue Jays, after losing two in a row, are still 30-28, so two games above 500. They're seven back in the division, but firmly in the wild card race. Looks like they're three games out of a wild card spot.
So the discussion last night at the Tripoli with the Mavens was that the people who are really hoping for the Cubs to have a 10-game losing streak are the Ricketts.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think they were thrilled with the Cubs' April start because then the narrative wouldn't be, hey, we're cutting cost. It would be, hey, the window closed on these guys and we're going to start over and rebuild, and then they could, you know, save a bunch of money. Then David Ross and the boys said, hey, we're not doing that. And then the injuries started happening and they said, we're still going to win. And now the Cubs are obviously firmly in the playoff race, half game out of the Central behind the Brewers, who have won 10 out of 11, are just surging right now.
Well, they were lousy for a while.
Well, they're really playing an easy part of their schedule, too. They're playing, it's a lot of the Diamondbacks and the Reds and the Pirates and stuff like that, which is fine. I mean, everyone plays the same schedule, essentially, but whereas the Cubs lately are playing only teams above 500 right now. But anyway, the Cubs are right in it, and yeah, it's the Ricketts' worst nightmare. Then you have Jed. You have Jed, who I firmly believe, because Theo's motto always was never waste a season. Because if you have any chance of getting in the playoffs, make the move to get in. Because you never know if you get hot and you can win it all. And I know that that's Jed's philosophy too. And I bet he feels handcuffed.
Are there? Is there a Rick Sutcliffe around at the trade line deadline for that you could add?
Well, they had one, Yu Darvish.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying this year.
I know. And decided to give him away to San Diego. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think they're going to add any salary. I mean, they might make some really small minor moves, but I don't think they're going to make a big splash.
Boy, if they're they're leading the division, and even they could screw up, the Cub mystique. I mean, I'm more anxious to watch the Sox now than I am.
Well, I really like watching both teams. Yeah. I think the White Sox might be the best team in baseball, they're certainly in the top three. And then the Cubs are really fun to watch to me, yeah, because I think they're overachieving, and it's always fun to watch an overachieving team.
Well, so what do you do about it?
Ross has gotten them to play a good brand of baseball. Remember how much they were striking out at the beginning of the season? They don't do that as much as anymore. They've become over the week by week a smarter team. With better approaches at the plate, not everybody, but in general. The Cubs are fun to watch. The White Sox are a lot of fun to watch. You can only imagine how good they would be with Robert and Jimenez in the lineup.
Yeah, you forget they're missing two of their big boppers right in the middle, and they're still as good as they are.
Yeah, they are.
That's probably something along the lines of 65-75 home runs.
Yeah, well, I don't think that Jimenez would have hit that much better than this Mercedes guy in the DH spot. Mercedes starting to drain a little bit now. We'll see if he makes adjustments, but I don't know that.
Well, I think they would play him both. I mean, occasionally, yes, Jimenez would be the DH, but I think they would put him in left field.
I thought they were pretty much going for DH permanently with him.
Well, I think eventually they're going to transition him in to DH, but I mean, he got hurt playing left field. I mean, he's a left fielder.
That's my point.
Well, I mean, but that was a fluke play. In my opinion.
Right, but he was, as Matt's saying, he wasn't penciled in to be the left fielder or to be the DH this year.
Correct.
Right.
And whether, whether Mercedes would have even made the team or not, who knows. And Mercedes, the first 6 weeks, was a heck of a, was an outstanding hitter. But Mercedes lately has not been, and there's probably a reason that he's a 28-year-old rookie. and you know he's going to have to adjust. He's going to have to stop swinging a crap himself.
Yeah.
If he wants to, because he's getting himself out now by the pitches he's hitting. Because his problem is partly that he swings and misses them, but his other problem is that he actually hits those pitches, and you can't do anything with a pitch that would hit you in the ankles if you didn't hit it.
Yeah, he's got tremendous coverage, so we say, but that hurts him.
Yeah, he's got a rather wide strike zone, is the way to put it. So you have to deal with that, but he was bound to turn into something that was not as good as what we saw in the first 5 to 6 weeks of the season, because the league would catch up and adjust to him. What you see, however, is that if it had been Eloy Jimenez, he's already been through that process. He's already become a really, really good hitter.
Yeah.
You know, he was good last year. He was in line anyway to be better this year. There's obviously no predicting, but he was in pretty darn good shape to.
I hope the kid makes it, because
and Robert was, you know, he was off to a great start and really showing what all the hype was about too.
I'm interested to see when the league starts adjusting to Patrick Wisdom, who is having a similar start to what Mercedes had at the beginning of the year. He just obviously got called up later. And he homered again last night. And the only difference, I would say, and I'd be interested to hear what you guys think, I think his swing is shorter and tighter, and I think his strike zone is a little bit better than Mercedes. So maybe he won't have the sudden decline and start chasing, but I do think the league will adjust to him. I mean, he's obviously not going to continue batting, you know, 400 or whatever,
yeah.
but I'll be interested
to
see
how. And honestly, that's how it is with every hitter that comes into the league and starts out hot. The league adjusts, then he has to adjust back. And it's that adjusting back thing that has been the undoing of many a hitter. In Wisdom's case, wasn't he a first round draft pick for somebody?
I think he was a first round pick for maybe the Cardinals, and he was a top prospect at the time.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, so some guys, you know, they had kind of given up on him, and that may have been legit. But you also see that there are the occasional highly touted players who don't come into their own until a little bit later on, and sometimes their teams give up on them too quickly. Jake Arrieta would have been a good example of that.
Yep.
As a guy who wound up being more or less a throw-in in a trade with the Cubs, because Baltimore had given up on him.
The hardest thing in the world is to scout your own players, it seems.
Well,
yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, and it's the most important thing. It may be more important than scouting other teams' players.
Well, I see with this Mercedes guy, and again, you guys probably know more about this these days. I see a very rare combination of a guy that can poke the ball to right field and a guy who can hit the ball a ton to left field. And right now, he's swinging his stuff out of the batter's box, but he has the ability that I don't see in very many people to hit the bad ball. Now he's, like Kevin says, he's chasing the bad ball into the dugout, basically, right? I mean, you know, it's really bad now because they've made. He had an expanded strike zone to begin with because he could put the bat on the ball, but now they've expanded to the point where you couldn't hit it with a telephone pole, and he's still swinging at it. So if he can bring himself
back. Yeah, hardly anybody can keep going hitting bad balls. There's a reason the strike zone is what it is.
Well, when I meant bad balls, the ones that when, especially if they have the shift on you, to hit the ball that's a quarter, you know, 2 or 3 inches outside and just poke it to right field, that to me is not a bad ball. That's a bad pitch given your. Talk about a stupid story. Ever tell you the story? For the first few years we went to spring training, I never went in the park because JD and his buddies would go down there and they'd rent a huge Winnebago, and they would stay in the Winnebago, which I never wanted to do. But anyway, they would park outside. Just talk about how times have changed. They paid for parking and they'd park right outside the right field wall at the old Hohokam Park. And we'd all pile up on the roof, and we'd watch the game from there. So it was like $2. And one, what's his name? One of the guys, the big radio host here from Chicago, did his show one day from the top of the Winnebago with the blender going in the background. I forget who it was. It was one of the guys who was at one of the sports stations. And so they get this guy who's playing right field, and Leon Dermes, how long ago this was. Leon Dermes was kind of a dead pull hitter. He's up to bat, and the right fielder is playing like way in the right center.
So the guy's like right in front of me. So I go, hey, buddy. I said, what are you doing over right center? This guy's a dead pull hitter. And the guy, all of a sudden you hear me yell to the center fielder, hey, am I supposed to be playing here? The center fielder goes, yeah. And all of a sudden the guy throws him a slow inside curveball and he rockets one foul, right? And I said, see what I mean? Your pitcher is such an idiot. He's throwing inside changeup with you in right center. How smart do you think that is? Sure enough, the next pitch, he launches a home run right over the foul pole. So I actually sounded smart for once in my life. But yeah, I mean, and I think you don't really want, if you go to a full-out shift on a right-handed batter, I mean, I would hope that if you and I were up there, Kevin, and they started throwing us outside, we're just going to reach out and poke one in the hole, right? If we can.
You would hope, but there are lots of guys that are just going to roll over that pitch, and they never develop the ability to avoid pulling the ball.
Well, then you'll hear one of the announcers say,
It's beyond me, because, you know, if I were to see those kinds of shifts, my whole focus in batting practice would be all about beating the shift.
Yeah.
I want them to move back, and until they move back, I'm just going to abuse it however that goes. It could be a bunt, and if you say I'm giving away power, you know what? Maybe I am giving away the potential for a home run, but by the same token, if I move them back, I'm going to hit a lot more extra, a lot more doubles. I'm going to get on base a lot more. And so, you know, there's such things as power situations where you really don't want to give it up. But, you know, there's a lot of situations, for instance, if I'm leading off an inning, where getting on base is a perfectly fine thing to do no matter how much power I have.
Yep. Hey,
I agree.
Can I interject here a controversial piece of economics that people will be chewing on here for the few minutes we have left? Will you guys mind? With all this stuff about interviewing people about raising prices and everything, and I'm going to say every time you interview somebody about raising a price, just about all the time, how's that for a statement, it means that you're interviewing an industry that is not competitive enough, that is somewhat of a cartel, somewhat of something. Because in a competitive world, the price, you cannot maneuver price. You can't do anything about it. So, for instance, if Matty Weber owns the farm in Iowa and he gives Kevin his major, what do you call the guy who runs the farm, the foreman? He gives Kevin a six-figure raise, and the price of corn is $2.50. It's still going to be $2.50 for Matty Weber. If he gives Kevin enough of a raise to where he's now losing money, he's just losing money. It's his own damn fault, right? One has nothing to do. The idea that you can influence that your cost in the short term. Now, of course, if the price of seed goes up for everybody over a period of the next few years, that's going to work its way into the system. And part of the price of feed is going to be eaten by the farmer, if you do the math. And part of it's going to be eaten by the customer. The price is just going to sneak up. But if the price of feed is up 5 cents a bushel, I'm going to say, based on my work, the price of corn is going to go up 3 cents. It doesn't all get passed through in a competitive world. That's why they call it a curve and not a straight line. So whenever you hear these people talking, remember you're listening to the oligarchs, for lack of a, how does that for a bad term, Kevin? You're listening to the oligarchs / monopolists. The idea that their cost goes up for the dishwasher and they can turn around and raise the price of the hamburger, they can only do that if they're the only hamburger place in town. And then you run the risk, if you overprice the hamburger, you sell less hamburgers, so that doesn't get you anywhere. But when the guy from Chipotle says he's raising prices, it's because everybody else has, or it's because he has enough pricing power he can do it on his own, and the other people follow suit. Basically, when it comes to economics, don't believe any of these people. You know, it's like asking, believing somebody on TV who just bought Bitcoin, telling you to buy Bitcoin, whether it's a fair economic assessment of the price. It's not. Am I wrong, guys, or not?
Well, I think you're right, as long as we don't have any price fixing going on.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We are having price fixing going on.
De facto price fixing or per se price fixing. And what I mean by that is that there's just an acceptance across the industry that, hey, we got to get our prices up because we have to recover this excess cost. So are you talking about this specifically as it relates to wages at the moment?
In general, whatever it is,
I mean, if it's a competitive industry, and I'm not saying that the competitive price won't have snuck up some with the snuck up a lot due to the money supply and the other things the Fed are doing. But I'm saying for you individually to say, you know, I'm raising the price of umbrellas, it's probably because you're the only umbrella manufacturer. Otherwise, the price of umbrellas is not set by you. It's set by the market, right? By other people. That's why I mentioned.
But then who cares? If it's set by other people and I raise my prices, then no one's going to buy from me. So who cares?
No, my point is that the guys that are on this, when they say to the guy from Coca-Cola, I raise the price of Coke because
then don't buy Coke.
Well, I understand that, but Coke is an oligarch. I mean, how many people really control the distribution of soft drinks in this country? Three,
probably.
So it's not like your farm in Iowa.
It's not like it's your first. It's not like it's your only beverage option. There's 5 million beverage options. Well, buy a different beverage.
Okay, I understand that.
Well, my point, you can't. I mean, you can't talk about that people control the market and then on the other side of your mouth say they don't.
No, my point, Matty, is that McDonald's has a serious amount of pricing power just because of their locations and the fact that other people are down with the COVID.
There's 500 fast food options.
Okay,
is there not?
I
can't think of a more competitive industry.
You live in Chicago. Nationwide, there's not very many. We're talking about every single exit for an expressway. Every neighborhood has McDonald's in a few blocks. If they raise their price of Coca-Cola, which they already have, by the way, I mean, it used to be a dollar. Now what is it? $2.50? I mean, or something. I mean, plus they have the economic lesson is that. The more competitive the situation is, the less your costs affect what you can charge. That's the lesson. If I said it wrong, then I said it wrong. But in other words, if you have 50 hamburger joints, there's going to be they're all different, obviously, and some are half pounds and some whatever. But by and large, there's a price for which you can charge for hamburger. If you give Thomas a raise and double the price of your hamburger, you haven't done yourself any good. You get the other people
look
at you and laugh. But the point is, more and more industries are not competitive. The one that everybody bitches at the most, it's probably the most competitive, is gasoline.
Gasoline's competitive. Grocery stores are competitive.
But now it's not competitive.
Restaurants are very competitive
right now. But are they competitive as they used to be? And how many grocery chains are there in some areas? In the city, if you want to drive, you can hit how many of them? Six.
Well, I mean,
five.
You have the Aldi, the Jewel, the Trader Joe's, the Whole Foods, the Mariano's, the Meijer. That's quite a few. And then you have like the small shops. So, you know, there's a million of those. Then you factor in the Walgreens and the CVS. I mean, there's a lot. 7-Eleven. There's a lot of options.
Right.
But I'm not saying that every industry is as competitive as grocery stores. I actually think grocery stores are very competitive. I'm just saying that unless it's a situation where like Apple and Samsung are the only two phone manufacturers and they both decide to double the price of phones, okay, well then I'm with you. But when you're talking about in general, if I run McDonald's and there's a Wendy's across the street and there's a Burger King there and there's a Shake Shack there and there's an In-N-Out Burger there and there's a, you know, Chick-fil-A there, and there's KFC there, and there's a Popeyes
there.
Where's
the In-N-Out Burger? I'm going there for lunch.
Well, in California.
All right. Is that competitive? I'd go there a second, but it's a little bit of a drive.
It is a little bit of a drive. My point is there's 500, you know, Subway, Hardee's, Carl's Jr., whatever, depending on where you live, there's 500 of them. Who gives a rat's ass if McDonald's raises the price of their burgers? Go to Arby's.
Okay. Whenever you say an economic principle, it's never... Every industry is going to be different. I try to say that, but maybe I didn't this time. Yes, but then again, there are people that maybe don't drive, and the McDonald's is across the street. Now, is the Burger King a mile away really competitive? I mean, that's the part about economics. Every single one of these decisions comes down to an individual person. If you and I are driving along, and we see an exit in the expressway, and there's five of those places right there, yeah. If we want a Coke and McDonald's is running a dollar special, we can run into the Coke, right? The Coke line or the McDonald's line. Anyway, that's why it's such a hard principle to understand, Kevin, is because it is very complicated and you can always come on an example and say, what about here? What about there? The fact is, a lot of these industries are not that competitive. We'll talk about this more with Russell. Kevin, thank you. SP Futures up 5 now, NASDAQ Futures up 36. Maybe today we'll go for the all-time record in the S&P. Tried yesterday, didn't get there. Be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. My economic foil this morning, and we have Mr. Russell Rhodes, the economic Zen master. So how's that? S&P futures up 5, NASDAQ futures up 41. I don't know if you were listening, Russell, but Matty Weber could have been in the class I was in with Milton Friedman many, many years ago. And he put out, he said exactly what I said, that in the short run, costs have in a competitive industry, in the short run, your costs have no bearing on what you can charge. And the class, of course, erupted. They had about 20 Matt Webers in the class, although these are kind of really nerd-looking dudes. Romani's not a nerd-looking dude. We're all over him. And he, the first time I ever see him get a whole lot of blowback is, what do you mean? And the answer, well, the answer according to him and the one that I think is right, is you have to consider what industry he's talking about. In a competitive world, if, for instance, you go back to the Iowa farm, and all of a sudden, the cost of seeds go up by 20%. Well, if everybody buys their seeds 3 months in advance, and you're the dum-dum that waited till the last week to buy yours, and now your seed costs 20% more than anybody else, for that year, the price of corn might go up a hair, but not enough to save your ass. You're just going to lose, right? You can't raise your price of corn when the price of corn is $3. You can't say, well, so it comes down to the environment you're talking about. And where I was trying to go with this is that in the world we now live in, where a lot of the industries, even though Maddie's right, there is some competition. But again, Maddie defines himself and his lovely bride as the control group with two cars out and about all the time. So they may, and I actually consider the Myers and Homer Glenn a competitor to the guy down the block to me in Lincoln Park. Well, how many people do that? They're not out in Homer Glen. So whenever you're talking about this stuff, you have to be careful of how you define your environment, because there's a million different economic environments, right? And what I said was, right, when you get on TV and you get to be the head of a big company, say Coca-Cola, which has a lot of pricing power, and Matty's right, there are other companies, that when he says, I got to pay somebody $11.50 an hour instead of $11.25, so I'm raising the price of Coke today. It's because he can, right? If you and I owned a restaurant and we had to pay some guy $11.50 an hour, it doesn't mean we could raise our price at all, right? Because how do you explain that? I mean, how you define the environment is so. Every environment has a different pricing mechanism.
Well, I
think, and I know you can poke a little hole in this one, but a good example of this is when you have the gas stations that are right across the street from each other, or you know, share the same corner. Yeah, if one gas station paid, you know, I'm just using hypotheticals here, $2 a gallon for the gas that they put in the ground, and all of a sudden there's a huge glut, and across the street is charging $1.95, they're going to have to adjust because nobody's going to come to them.
Right.
It doesn't matter what they paid for what they put in the ground.
Well, that's right. It doesn't matter. So yeah, I mean, in the short term,
that's the example I use because it's like you just said, Lincoln Park versus Homer Glen. Well, you got to go through a lot of effort to compare those two places.
Right.
If you drive the same route all the time and you always pick whichever one happens to be cheaper without taking into account where you got to take the left turn and all that kind of stuff, you're going to go with the cheaper one. And it's difficult to envision the price suddenly dropping, you know, because
yeah.
That's just not how it really happened. But if it were to, if the guy across the street suddenly, if he's getting, you know, if he's got a guy with a slightly crooked nose that is able to hijack something and get him some really cheap gas, you know, across the street's going to have to lower their price. And sometimes you got to sell at a loss because of that.
Well, sometimes, for sure, depending on when you get the last, and that's... Yeah. I guess it's the cleanest example, gasoline not being clean,
mm-hmm.
is if Mandy Weber's gas station goes out and buys a huge tanker full of gas at $2 a gallon, and he's happily charging $2.40, and all of a sudden everybody else has to pay $2.20 for their next, and they're charging $2.60. Well, Mandy, the first thing Mandy's going to do, I'm guessing, is going to raise his to $2.60.
Yeah.
Right? Not because he needs to, but
there's certain markets that are completely demand driven.
Yeah. And there's other, but heaven help you if you're the last guy who bought it at 240 and now it's trading 220 on the pump because you got to drop it to 220.
Right.
Because it is very, very competitive. I would say, I'll give Manny where would you, if you had a gasoline station in Chicago, where would be your two best spots to have it, Manny? Location, location, location.
I would say anywhere off the expressway has got to be a good spot. So, especially in a good neighborhood. So, where you can really charge. So we know our guy on North Avenue right off the expressway.
Oh, he's proud of being the highest.
Oh, he loves, he knows that, it's people that are taking that exit are usually pretty well off heading into Lincoln Park.
Yep.
And he also knows that if you're on E and you get off the expressway and you see the gas station, you're going to pull in and no matter what the price is, and he takes full advantage of that.
Plus, if you're...
That's got to be one of the...
Well, if you're a young lady and that... Are you really going to drive 5 blocks into the hood to save a dime? First of all, you wouldn't want your daughter doing that. And I'm going to say the stations between the... not as much as that guy. He's the individual best. But the guys between the Stevenson Expressway and Midway. You got to fill up the rental car before you bring.
Oh yeah, that's a good one too. Yeah, by the airport.
That's where I've always wanted to be.
The gas stations by the airport.
Yeah. Several times.
Those guys. It's if you don't get it far enough away, Phoenix is the same way. I remember I drove by a whole bunch of places at 250. I think I paid 3.25. I'm sitting there, you idiot. So Russell, what's going on in your world when you there's got to be an awful lot of stuff in your classes regarding. Current events and the Fed and prices going up and the stock market. I mean, what's the hottest topic among the younger people?
They're all fascinated by SPACs still. That's the one that they're really, really hung up on. And I don't quite understand why, other than I guess it's just if they see that people have made money somewhere, they jump all over that one. I'm not getting as much blowback about AMC and GameStop like I was before.
So
they also stopped asking me about crypto.
Really?
Well,
what is I'm kind of on the
news. That's not a sell signal to everyone. Then yeah. I don't know what is.
Yeah.
On your crypto.
So it typically they're a good and I. When I was at SIBO, the person that kind of took care of the intern class before me. He had like small groups present stocks at the end of their internship at SIBO, and he would actually use it as a short list.
I'm not surprised at all by that. That's the first thing that popped into my mind.
Here, it gets better. So then I started working with the interns, and I taught them how to, because one of the books I've written is a study guide that goes along with the Warren Buffett way. So I taught them how to, like, you know, approach a stock like Warren Buffett, and they all came in the year that I was running it. They all came in with these really solid ideas, and he was just very perplexed.
is his first name Jim?
That's because I had, you know, talked to him about how to pick a stock instead of just tell me what would be a good stock to buy right now and leave it at that. You know, I actually gave him a little guidance on that one.
Russell,
when
you
completely screwed up his short list.
When you, I've never been. I mean, obviously, we at the firm here, I won't say a stock expert because I never professed myself to be one. As I traded 19 years in the OEX pit, which was a market, you know, basically pit, you end up with a lot of knowledge of the stocks that your clients bring in, right? You end up,
yeah.
I mean, but you know, there's just not enough bandwidth for me to study the 50 newest stocks that, you know, came out 2 months ago and figure out this is the best buy out of the 50. I mean, I guess I'd love to have that kind of personnel, but how much do you trust the news and what, especially in this world now where they don't want to give guidance or anything, how much do you trust the stuff that filters to you about these companies? I mean, is it enough to really...
Not a whole lot.
But is it really enough to make an assessment?
But here's the thing. I do systematic volatility trading for myself. I don't buy stocks.
Okay, but...
that's part of the... And the reason that I do things the way that I do is because it's a little niche that I have some expertise in, and I can focus in very closely on the type of index strategies that I do, because of what you just said, basically. It's darn near impossible for me to really dig into a stock and know it as well as people whose job is to focus on that stock. But beyond that, I don't know if the companies have any idea of how things are going to be in 6 months. So how in the world were they able to give me any good guidance?
Well, I would. It's always nice, and again, it's not always like profitable. But if I decided, okay, based on my research, such as it is, or it might even be a client. You know, some clients do more research mm-hmm. in specific areas than you do, and you learn from each other. But a lot of times, if I were to say, boy, you know, I think this oil patch looks like it's going to go up, but it seems to me that the natural gas piece is going to you know, maybe outpace the oil piece, the wet piece, for lack of a better mm-hmm. term. It was always nice to have Shanahan around, Tom Shanahan, because that's what he was really into. He would go to these conferences yeah. and stuff, and I'd say, okay, yeah. Shanahan, here's a list of the 10 biggest oil companies. If I like the natural gas piece better than the oil, which one should I get? He'd go, these three. You know, doesn't mean I was ever going to be right. It just meant that at least I got... You know, if you like the natural gas piece, you know, buy Chevron instead of Exxon, or buy Texaco instead of something else, because then that's another whole brand of ball. I mean, there's whole different layers of research,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, because
yeah,
but it, you know, it is interesting to do. I wish if you had, say, if you lowered yourself and became an analyst at say Stocks and Jocks, or not Stocks and Jocks, at PTI, where would you find the biggest amount of money in picking stuff out? I'd say to me it would either be the oil area or maybe the new drug area. But I don't know. What would you say? I'm just lobbing.
I think in some of the areas that we've got some imbalances right now, I'd be all over the semiconductors and the semiconductor equipment companies.
How do you? A lot of that stuff is overseas. How do you get enough? I mean, obviously, we didn't even talk about it yet. We will. This new bill that was just passed yesterday, they're going to start pouring a lot of money at semiconductor companies and so forth. So, I mean,
they should.
Let's put this way.
It's the whole reason we care about Taiwan so much. That's where most of them are coming from.
Well, without lobbing a political bomb out there, right now, the spot you want to be is one of the stupid aides that's writing this bill up. Because if you're not trading on this bill and inside information, something's wrong with you. Because, you know, right now people are scribbling on a piece of paper in Washington or on a computer, showing my age, mm-hmm. who's going to get this money? And that's what we want to get our, that's what we want to invest in. And that to me is not the investing that I knew growing up. And I think it sucks, but that's just me. That you have to.
Well,
go ahead. I'm talking too much.
Well, just there's certain things that are, you know, like I think we have a strategic oil reserve still. There's stuff that you always want to hold back, but there's also stuff that you want to have a lot more control over. And one of the things that we learned in this pandemic is we didn't have control over a lot of things that we wished we did at the most critical moment. And I think the semiconductor industry is another area that's very critical because they go into everything. You know, I'm actually sitting in a hotel room right now, and I can see about, not including what I brought up, but there's probably 10 semiconductors in here. And it's actually one of these little sweet things. So I've got a microwave and a fridge and all that kind of stuff. They've got silicon in them. They're essential, and they're essential for our defense as well. So I got no problem with them trying to pour money into that area as long as, and this is where it gets all mucked up.
Well, they're essential because we made them.
As long as they're not, you know, as long as they're doing it smartly, but.
But, you know, but Russell, they're essential.
That's where it kind of gets lost.
Well, I'm certainly not going to argue with you that they're essential. They are. But they're essential because we made them that way. I mean, when we did the, talk about an old story. Well, I was on the, this is me now. I was on the, double secret, Y2K committee, and how susceptible the CBOE was to, and I was listening. I went to one thing, and Chuck Henry had his, you know, Chuck. I really like Chuck. I thought he was one of the nicest men I ever met, and very, very competent as a president. I could say that if he would have gotten promoted instead of them getting Bratsky, the world would be a different place. But I won't say that. Anyway, but the interesting.
Bratsky did some great things.
I just said. I'm just saying. I didn't. I'm not. Yeah. You know. But anyway, I thought Chuck was an incredibly accomplished executive and knew the industry. Anyway, I was a big Chuck fan. But he had some guys in talking about the stuff on the floor. Now, when I say the stuff on the floor, this is different than it was in 1983 we built that place, correct? And New York Stock Exchange was built, when Hector and Ulysses were running around, 40 years before, 50 years before. Well, the difference in, like, the phone systems, I'm going to say New York Stock Exchange was all copper wired, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
So the phones there had no chips in them, correct, I would say. I'm sure some people had
new systems. The first ones that we got, no. The ones that you'd break and they'd run behind you and replace it, no.
Yeah, so, but in the CBOE.
Those are pretty basic.
In the CBOE, everything was, I'm going to use the term, new. So every single phone set had at least a chip in it, correct? But when you bought chips, this is what I learned. When you bought chips, you didn't buy, say you had a chip that was supposed to be for, you know, God knows what, something halfway sophisticated, whatever that would be. And it was a second. It didn't pass. Mm-hmm. Something happened in the production. The second chip for whatever it was designed to do, say for a car or something, was perfectly fine for a phone. So everything you had in front of you had a chip or two in it, but you had no idea where they came from because they were seconds, they were whatever. So, in fact, you had no idea whether when you flipped to 2000, and now you needed four decimals instead of three, right, all of a sudden what was going to work and what wasn't because everything had chips in it, and you had no idea where the origin of the chips were.
The best way to say what you're saying is that the chips had like embedded code that you couldn't see inside of them.
You couldn't see because they were just
like a black box. You didn't really know exactly what it could handle and what it couldn't. And that's with software you can update software.
Right.
But there's actually embedded instructions in semiconductors, and those embedded instructions, you weren't 100% sure they were good, so you replaced them.
Well, and when you start talking about that, there's a huge market, and it has a bad connotation to it, but it really shouldn't. One of the guests of the show, she hasn't been on in a while, but her brother is in, I'll use the term, the fibers business. Now, you know what that is. And they would get, like Celanese makes most of the Celanese and DuPont make most of the fibers in this country, mm-hmm. probably still to this day. Well, if there's a run at Celanese or DuPont, it's supposed to be, you know, upholstery grade fiber. And all of a sudden, the thing bleeps up, and all of a sudden somebody goes, this didn't work out right. Well, they're going to sell it to you for, like, you know, some minuscule part of the cost it was supposed to go to you for. Okay, you can't use it for fine upholstery, but it could be the best, you know, sleeping bag fill you ever saw, right? Way better than normally somebody ever puts in a sleeping bag. So if you buy this stuff and then you use, you're actually upgrading what you do. So by buying seconds on something that maybe you're supposed to power a car and sticking them in a phone and using only half the chip, you might have a better chip than you ever dreamed you were going to buy for that phone, right? So it's not like people got away cheap. They actually might have been better stuff in there than you start. But the point being is nobody had any idea the origin of any of this stuff.
Right.
So, and now we're talking about where we have a chip shortage, which we do, but the same people now, this is the bad part. And this is what makes me, as a Southside guy, pretty pissed off. The same people who took the stuff to China to save 50 cents are now going to get the money, now going to get federal money to bring it back. Why should that bother me? Why should that bother me? Because, you know, it's like the SEC totally screws up, or the FINRA or somebody, you know, somebody comes in, the Bernie Madoff situation. What do? You increase the budget. You increase the budget. Well, that's interesting. The same people who
all the people that are playing by the rules have to pay more.
Yeah, it's a anyway.
That's because that's how they're funded. Is basically there's a little bitty piece of buying transactions that goes to those guys, and if they get a bigger budget approved because of a Bernie Madoff situation, it costs all the rest of us in the industry.
Right, and then none of them lose their job.
And that's why we get so mad at him.
Yeah, well, that sort of is the truth. Hey, so what do you make of these stocks that are? I was mentioning the other day, and you weren't here. I wish you would have been. This, in my memory, and you obviously have much more access to computers, which you may remember better than me. I can always remember either by reading about it or by seeing it, crazy stock price run ups. You know, be it the dot com stuff was clearly one. I mean, I've read about the railroads, I've read about TV, I've read about radio, those kinds of things. But they always seem to be in industries, Russell, that you really don't have a history on how to value the thing. I mean, look at eBay. eBay ran up like a mother until they finally got big enough to where you could say, okay, this is how much they're doing a year, or they're a retailer, and this is how we price them. And all of a sudden, they're still a fine company, but they're just not on anybody's big-time crazy list anymore, right? But this is the first time I can remember regular stocks that have been around for 10 years, you know exactly what they make, being part of this kind of thing. You know, your AMC, the movie theaters. I mean, am I just not remembering something, or is this new to you and individual stocks that have been there forever?
This is totally new to me. I cannot ever remember. Yeah, I can. You know, relatively new companies, that makes sense. Something like GameStop that's been around for, you know, a couple of decades, I guess. No, I do not ever recall seeing something like this. Except, you know, you say that. I'm reading, so in the investment banking class I'm teaching this summer, we're reading a bunch of history of the market. Then I was reading the internet stuff to prepare for class tonight. And, you know, there were companies, there was like companies that added .com to their name but didn't change anything they did, and stocks went nuts back then. And we had I think there was a company out on Long Island that made tea or something. Maybe I'm just thinking of Long Island Iced Tea. I don't know. But and they changed their name to Long Island Bitcoin or something like that, and the stock went nuts. So I think there have been some funny instances like that, but not where the company hasn't changed their strategy at all.
Well, actually, I have
it just kind of happened.
We have a family member, an in-law, not a family member, but somebody in the family who married somebody who was in. These guys were in the fiber. They were one of the original groups that was laying fiber optics. And somehow the area that they were laying the fiber optics, they became considered part of the internet buildup. So they ended up getting priced like an internet company, even though all they were doing was laying fiber in the ground, and they sold it and they got a huge price. So I consider that more of like a, I don't know if I want to call that a mistake or a sleight of hand or something. I don't know if it's the same as movie theaters where you can actually stand and look at. I mean, you're right. A lot of people did that where they wanted to be priced as a dot-com company, and some of them were pretty successful in pretty innovative ways, right? By buying a website
Their names changed, and then they just turned right around and kept doing the same stuff they were doing, but the stock went ballistic to the upside.
Well, what is, maybe you don't, you probably know this better than me, what is the progression if PTI Securities was a public company, and all of a sudden we became one of these things, and now we see our stock and we think we're worth $20 a share, and who knows, maybe that's optimistic, and all of a sudden it's trading like $120, and we're like, wow, if anybody should be selling something here, like ought to be us. Actual treasury stock, we can just go out and sell without even pretty much telling anybody, right? Because it's just trading there, we can trade it. We say we bought it for Maddie Weber's bonus, and I say, hey, you got to wait 6 months. This is going back out. We bought it at 20, and now it's going out at 120. Don't worry, your bonus will be bigger, kind of thing. But once we're done with that, how do you, because AMC is trying to do this, how do you enter the fray now with new issues, with disclosures, especially if you know in your heart of hearts it's still worth 20 and it's trading 150, sort of like the guy in AMC has gotten himself in a pickle on. How do you traverse those waters? I mean, you actually have to go out for an outing, you got to do a registration. I mean, how do you do that in a short-term period of time?
Not necessarily. There are companies that will, and a lot of companies will, file a shelf registration where they have the ability to issue shares in the next 2 or 3 years, I think 3 years, as long as they keep the registration current. And keeping your registration current is reporting your quarterly numbers. So there are a lot of companies out there that that have a secondary and have that ability. I think GameStop had one, and they didn't sell the shares as quickly, you know, and everybody was like, why didn't you take advantage of this? So I think GameStop had the ability to sell not a ton of shares, but could have done so in the run-up, and they just didn't. And some people think maybe they were in their quiet period because their run-up was right toward the end of the quarter. But that's what typically companies have the ability to sell some shares if they have a shelf registration. Otherwise, you actually have to go out and do a secondary registration, which you file the paperwork, and it's a few days before you can actually sell the shares, so the market has time to react to that.
Well, what if you? So
that's the two ways that you go about doing that.
What if your original?
And then, of course, all the officers and the board members and everything, they can sell their shares, and we've seen a ton of that in AMC this year.
Now, but they have to notify people before or just after?
After. I think there's, and again, the rules are always changing, and I'm old, so I might be quoting a rule from 20 years ago, but from what I remember, I think they were supposed to let you know within 10 days.
Yeah, because, I mean, it gets sort of...
I think they can sell, and then they have to... I think they have, like, maybe a 10-day window to report it.
Well, think about this one during break. If you go out for half a billion shares, you know, again, use PTI as the example, and we only sell 450 million, does that mean we get to hang on to the other 50 and toss them out as we want, or we just there's a time frame, if we don't sell them, we don't sell them?
Yeah, if you don't sell them, you don't sell them.
So authorized and approved would drop from 500 million to 450?
No, because they're on the shelf, they're not included in the, and I always say on the shelf because that's how it was taught to me.
Yeah.
You can put them on the shelf until you need them. If they're on the shelf, they don't count as part of the float until they've been actually issued.
Okay, S&P Futures up 575, NASDAQ issues up 40. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know.
Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 750 now, and NASDAQ futures up 53. So we're probably going to make our run at this record today, S&P. And I'm going to say maybe today we make it, although every time we've been up in the morning, we've been down. We've sold off into the close, and the days that we've been down in the morning, we've gone up into the close. So it's ended up being very quiet for the last couple of weeks. Not sure exactly why. Dow futures down 16. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 71 now, 0.5%. FTSE down 28.4%. CAC Rand's actually up 3. We call that flat. So down to mixed a little bit over in Europe. Asia, we got Nikkei down 102.3%. Shanghai up 11. That's 0.3. So they're opposite the other directions. Hang Seng down 38. Let's call that one flat. As a way of review, yesterday Dow was down 30. S&P up 0.74, so call that flat. NASDAQ was up 43. Bonds. 10-year yield down 3 basis points to 1.49. The Bund down 2 to minus 0.25. Again, heading further into the negative, which, you know, again, is problematic for me. But Japan unchanged at 0.075. UK, positive 0.75. So, again, they're all over the black. Oil, up 38 cents, back over $70 to $70.43. Did not spend long under 70. Brent up 47 cents, 72.69. Natural gas unchanged at 3.12. RBOB up a penny at 2.23. We've got gold is now up a dollar. It's 18.95. It's been really close in this range between really like 18.75 and it just gets over 19, then it gets slapped back like whack-a-mole. So we'll see if it makes a run at it or not. Silver up 9 cents, 27.82. Copper down 4 cents, 4.50. And our favorite Bitcoin is up 2,200, back nearing the top end of the recent range of 35,105. The range, you know, that I've got calculated sort of between 30 and 36, maybe. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. A guy from the coach of the Giants died, huh?
Yeah, Jim Fossil died of a heart attack at the age of 71. He was a former New York Giants football coach. 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a crash on the south side heading northbound on I-57 just before 119th Street. And this crash is blocking the left lane and causing stop-and-go traffic heading inbound on I-57, so expect delays as they work to get that cleared off. No issues on the Bishop Ford right now. Same for the Ryan. Looking okay this morning. Traffic building heavily on the Stevenson, Eisenhower, and Kennedy right now, but no accidents to report. Edens is looking good in both directions. Same for Lakeshore Drive. Off the expressways, there's a fire up in Skokie that has Brown Avenue closed between Greenwood Street and Lake Street due to that fire crew on the scene. And just west of there, there's a crash at Toohey and north Mobile Avenue. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, sunshine and a high of 75. Right now it's crystal clear and 73 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies and a high of 103. Right now it's clear and 74. In sports, the first place White Sox won again last night. They beat Toronto 6-1 down at Guaranteed Rate. Cubs were in San Diego last night and they blew out the Padres 7-1. Diamondbacks lost to the A's 5-2. NBA basketball, Phoenix Suns game 2 tonight against the Denver Nuggets at home. Suns lead the series 1-0. That's a 6:30 p.m. Arizona time tip-off. Chief.
Russell, how much do you look at these labor numbers and I'm sure in the classes and stuff you look at them and this idea that we have 9.7 million jobs that are supposedly unfilled and so forth, and I look at these numbers and I'm having trouble putting them together with what I'm looking at. I use this A1 employment report, which Carl says I should use another one that's unadjusted, but when you're going back this far, I don't think it makes that much difference. But the way I'm looking at this, these numbers, see if they make sense to you, and if you can make anything out of them. There's a bunch of numbers on this page, but they all come together in some ways. I'm looking at the end of 2019, so right before COVID, and then I'm looking at the end of May. Okay, so we had 259,175 in the civilian, non-institutionalized population. So does that include Thomas? Really? Yeah. Anyway, anybody who's over 16 that's not institutionalized, I guess that's what jailed and mental hospitals and what do they mean by institutionalized these days? I guess it's jails and hospitals. But anyway, that number is up 2 million people since 2019. So we've gained essentially, well, it's not even 1% of the population, but we've gained 0.008 of the population. The amount of people that are in the workforce was 163,539. Now it's 169,35. So we're down roughly 2.7 million people that are in, they're actually available to work for whatever reason. Out of that, we've got 6 million less that are employed. We had 157, now we got 151. So that's the number that we hear all the time, that there's that many people less employed. And we all sort of agree with that, right? We have, of that, 3 million of them are unemployed, which means they're looking for work, right? So that number's gone from 6 million to 9. And we have a little over 3, maybe 4 million people, which is a lot of the people that have entered the work, become citizens or whatever. We've got almost 5 million people, 4.7, that are in this nebulous, we don't know what they're doing. They're not working, but they're not actively looking for a job. They could be retired, they could be students, they could be anything. But that's the number that has gone up so dramatically in the last 15 years that I think is the cause of a lot of our deficits and everything else. We have, let's put it this way. Since 2006, we've got 33 more million people in the country, of which only 9 are working and 23 are in this other column. We don't know what they're doing. So we have less. Go ahead.
There's an age thing where, you know, there's like little bumps in how many people are certain ages. And I think we just got a larger number of retirees versus the number of people going to college right now in that age group. So some of it's from that. Some of it's demographic.
Oh, I don't doubt that the people that are close to
but
this.
Not all of them.
No matter how you cut it, we now have 3 people working for every 2 people. Actually, if you count the unemployed, more than 2 people not working. And when that number gets this high, I think you have a problem tax wise and everything else. Right? I mean,
I don't know if they have figured out, whoever they are, they have figured out how to account for people that are independent contractors working for themselves for Uber and Lyft. I think there are certain types of jobs that don't count as real jobs because you don't get benefits with those jobs. And so I think that I think that's where part of the disconnect, the gig economy thing, which I hate that phrase, because it's not a gig when you're an Uber driver for 3 years.
But if when you talk about, you know, the two different,
a gig is something you do for 2 weeks because somebody went out of town during spring break and you're in college, you need to make some extra money, so you picked up somebody else's job for a week or something like that.
Well,
not
I think Russell
something.
I'm gonna take a page.
Hours a week for
I'm gonna draw on my Carl learning. I think that that's what you get with the two different surveys. I mean, if you call up, yeah. Well, when you were there at the CBOE and say how many people are working last week, that's when you are going to be there as one of the people counted as working for, well, you were working for the Options Institute, but still, you were working for the place, yes or no. That's in the, mm-hmm. the number, the main headline number, that you get for, you know, once a month, right? On the first Friday of the month. But right. So you could be dropped off the rolls there, and all of a sudden now you become a consultant, and nobody's going to pick up that number until you send in your income tax and whenever you send it in April, showing that you were a 1099 employee, and oh, by the way, you made all this money. But in the household survey, they're supposed to be calling home, and your wife should be picking up the phone saying, well, assuming people pick up the phone anymore, in the household survey, yeah. they should say, oh yeah, Russell was working, I don't know, she's not going to use your name, but she was working here, but now she's going to say his behind is not on the sofa eating bonbons, right? He's out working somewhere.
Yeah.
So that's how you're supposed to pick up the electrician who's working on his own and not for a company, right? In the household survey. What I'm talking about here is the household survey. So the guy from Uber, when you call his house, he's going to say, yes, I'm working. Hopefully, right? Mm. Even though, no company is going to say he's work. Well, does Uber report? Actually, I wonder. You know, there's a good question. Some states are trying to get them to be employees, but if you call up Uber and say how many people work there,
yeah, I think California they're trying to make them employees.
But but a separate question is, if you call the head of Uber HR and say how many people are employed, do they say just the people in their offices, or do they tell you how many drivers they get out?
I think they probably tell you the number of people in their offices that
I think you're probably
get
right.
salaries and benefits, and not their contract workers.
But you,
because the driver last I understood it was the contract. Their contract. If you drive for Uber, you don't necessarily work for them. You're contracted with them.
Well, but the next question you would ask, and hopefully I would ask, is okay. We know they're not your employees yet, or the court says you're not your employees, but how many people picked up a ride for Uber last week? Right? And if the number is a million, mm-hmm. you gotta count them as something, right? They're not an employee.
And that would be awesome data.
I'll bet they have it.
I'm sure that they don't share it.
You know what? I'll bet they do.
You know, Uber and Lyft are not going to share that sort of data. But you know, it would be interesting to see, you know, how many rides there were each week, and get an idea of how quickly the economy really is opening back up.
Well, I don't know, Maddie, we've had people on here that seem to have a pretty good idea of how many people are driving Uber and Lyft. Are they just making it up, or is there? You think it's there someplace that somebody could dig out some of this stuff?
Oh, I think they'll tell you how many drivers they've got out there. I'm just wondering how many rides if you understood the number of rides each week, that would be an incredible number to extrapolate against a bunch of other macro trends.
But I wouldn't care if I registered as a driver and had never picked anybody up. I mean,
a quick Google search says there's between 1.5 and 2 million Uber and Lyft drivers. But to Russell's point, I don't know if we know exactly how many rides.
So we don't know if any of them picked anybody up last week.
They think there's right. 2 million total, but they think that about 500,000 are overlapped and drive for both Uber and Lyft. So they think it's actually about 1.5 million drivers.
But we don't know. My significant other, Audrey, she signed up as a Lyft driver. She did one ride like 2 years ago. So is she counted or not?
Good question.
In Hong Kong, they have multiple services. I had a cab driver in Hong Kong that had 11 phones in front of him on his dashboard.
Oh man.
For all the different groups. I'm trying to find it on my phone right now because it just blew me away. I was like, holy crap, what's going on here? But yeah, he had 11 phones for different things that he did. I assume he was carting people around, delivering food, you know, doing everything that you could possibly do.
Well, the bottom line on this thing is we're 6 million people less, let's say, regularly employed, for a wacky term, than we had in 2019. Mm-hmm. and allegedly they keep throwing his 9.7 million people coming back for work. And I'm really stunned that the population is only up a little bit in 2.5 years. Well, 1.5 years. And the actual people in the workforce is down by 3 million people. Where did they go? They all get institutionalized? They all in jail?
No, sitting on the couch watching Judge Judy with me.
Well, there you go. I thought she retired.
Give him a check.
I thought she retired.
I was on a plane. I missed Judy yesterday. I'm pretty upset.
By far the highest paid person on TV.
I find it so funny that you guys find it so funny that my the end of my work day, that's how I decompress. Although she's been really mean to people lately. I might bail out on Judy.
I have honestly never watched 1 second of that show.
Well, if you worked out in the afternoon.
It's funny. I would say instead of watching it, go to YouTube and watch a couple of times once you freaks out on people. That's really the fun stuff.
By the way, I found this interesting article here by a website called businessofapps.com, and they actually have really detailed Uber statistics. Pre-pandemic, post-pandemic. Apparently, they say Uber generated $11 billion in revenue in 2020, which was a 21% decrease due to the coronavirus pandemic. But they bounced back. Q4 of 2020 was back to pre-pandemic levels, mostly behind Uber Eats, which is the service that picks up food from restaurants and delivers it to people that Uber owns. 93 million people used Uber in Q4 2020, below its peak of 111 million active users in 2019, but still pretty high. And apparently Uber drivers completed 4.98 billion trips in 2020, which was a 27% decrease from the 6.9 billion trips in 2019.
Well, you don't notice when I drive home from work, especially if I'm driving somebody, I end up on the city streets, you don't see nowhere near as many of the knuckleheads like stopping in front of you and letting people out, not even knowing it's an Uber. At least with a cab, you know it is a cab. So you don't see them. For a while, you couldn't go anywhere in New York. The place was just loaded with Uber drivers clogging the streets, wasn't it? Wasn't it, Russell?
Oh, it was ridiculous.
Same here.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Well, are the cabs, which is more expensive now? I took my first two Ubers last week. I think
they're about the same now. Because Uber raised their prices, and which you knew they would. They took over market share and then raised their prices. Weird. Where have we seen that before? Yeah. So I think
which
they're about the same.
Nothing to do with their costs.
Right, of course not. But it's still much more convenient to get an Uber, because when can you wave down a cab?
Oh, yeah.
It's almost impossible.
And the one thing that is cheaper for Uber is late in the evening when I would finish teaching a class at Loyola and I'd want to get back to my suburban home and hadn't driven. It was typically about $30 to get the ride home. You know, which is not. It's worth it to me.
But what do you do if it's
taking the train and having an extra hour to get home?
What do you do if it's after a Cub game? The rapidity that it goes up. One of the had a listener years ago, and I think she might have died, unfortunately. But
if you're driving to a Cub game, you're a moron.
No, I'm saying she drove Uber for like a little bit, and all of a sudden she sends me an email that she got her best night ever because it was right after some monster Cub game, and they were on the double, triple, quadruple stretch or whatever they call it. And some guy wanted to go to Elmhurst, and it was $200, and the guy said okay.
Yeah.
I want to get home.
Yeah, basically, I want to get home to the company who's paying for it or whatever. But, I mean, the 2 days I was on it, I would kick in, and all of a sudden, the guy was going to be there in 2 minutes. I wasn't ready yet. It was $15 one time and $12 the next. I mean, I find that a little odd. I mean, it wasn't like...
It's completely based on demand.
You
can click it every 30 seconds, and it's never the same.
See, I don't think that's a positive. I think if it was... $15 where you could count on it. And oh, by the way, if it was snowing, it was 30. I could get that, but the weather hasn't changed in the last 5 minutes. At least the cab, you can count on it.
Well, I've seen the price.
Anyway,
it's not weather driven. I mean, it can be weather driven, but it's just driven by how many cars in the area and how many people are clicking the app at that moment.
But who decides it? The driver or the company?
I had one time.
The driver.
I needed to go just under a mile in New York in a thunderstorm. And the Uber was going to be $125.
Yeah, I mean, that's insane. I've New Year's Eve in Los Angeles a few years ago, it was, I was in West Hollywood trying to get to downtown, and it was, and you can't wave a cab down in LA. This is even back when it was all cabs. That's like a rule they have. You, for some reason, you have to call the cab in advance.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
wow.
They, you can't flag a cab. They'll just drive right by you. It's some rule they have. But anyway, Uber was like $250 to get from West Hollywood to downtown, and we didn't really have a choice. There's no train you can get. There's no cab you can wave down. So we basically just like sucked it up and split it, you know, five ways or whatever, and that was it.
Well, that's the whole purpose of having a cab, is to flag it down. I don't get that.
Yeah, you could not flag cabs down.
What's the cab situation like in New York these days, Russ? I haven't been there in so long. You still get a cab?
I haven't been. I that's not where I am, but I haven't been there since the pandemic.
So
I'll ask some of my coworkers.
Yeah, I haven't been there. I was there right before the pandemic. I was there like the fall of 19. And
that's where you got engaged, right?
Yes, around there. I would say that it was the same as here. It was half as many cabs as normal, and they were replaced by Uber drivers.
Really? Well, those medallions got up to be what, $250,000 for a while? Cab medallions. I mean, it was a much more of a full time job for life, a cab driver in New York, than kind of it was here. You guys, I mean, it was a vocation there.
Yeah.
And just all right, Russell, we've got all these numbers flying. I don't know how they could be 9.6 million job offers. That puts 5 million more people back to work than we had in 2019. But anyway, what you hear on TV isn't always, you know, the truth, I guess. What are you telling your people regarding inflation and the fact that the Fed is trying to keep the money supply numbers away from us? I mean, I can't think of anything more unconscionable than that. We're not going to tell you.
No, you just point out what is actually going out in price. The students don't care about lumber because they're not building a new fence this summer. I know older guys that are kind of shocked at how much the building supplies and whatnot are costing. You just point out in the reality of things going up.
Well,
you know, and I don't think. I've been thinking more and more about this because people are starting to catch on that there's a disconnect between CPI and what you're really paying for things. The problem is we're just now starting to go out and be hit in the face with how much things cost.
Right.
You know, I haven't picked up my McDonald's breakfast for like a year, and then I went back and my McDonald's breakfast, which is always the exact same thing. When I first started coming on your show, it was under $7, and now it's just over $9.
Yeah, those are real.
And that's over the course of, I'd say, 3 or 4 years.
I have to ask a question here, because I listen to people on CNBC, and I'm sure he's a good guy. Of course, Rick Santelli argued with him all the time. Steve Leisman, how can I say this politely? I can't. The guy has become such a lapdog for the Fed and these other people. They have to genuflect to the god of the Fed. This Jerome Powell, to me, acts like he doesn't, he never took an economics course in his life. But my question is when they start talking about we're going to have a little inflation, but we're going to have no problem with dealing with it and everything. And the thing that I'm going to ask you this, I'm going to write this paper here for you in a half a minute. The whole idea of inflation means that the Fed has lost control. And when people start talking about, well, the Fed can do this and do that, and they have all these tools like to deal with inflation. The fact that there is inflation means that they have lost control. Where am I wrong? That they're out of control. Mm-hmm. There is no control when you're out of control, by definition, is there?
No, just think of inflation being a battle, and the Fed's, you know, constantly adjusting levers and whatnot, or they have so many bullets to fight inflation with. Well, you know, it's like the end of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. You know,
yeah.
They got about 3 more bullets left to fight inflation, and they go running out again. You know, they get blown away by the army. So that's where we're going to get, where the Fed just isn't going to be able to do anything. And I can't really think of anything on the fiscal side that could be done. You know, because you're supposed to be able to combat these things through the Fed, through monetary policy, but then through legislation as well. And throwing money at our semiconductor industry does not necessarily push inflation down.
Tell me we're not going to do wage and price controls again, please. Not in my lifetime. Please tell me we're not going to do
it. Oh, good God. Oh, of course we are.
If we have three bullets left and we're surrounded, don't we just use them on ourselves?
That would be the proper thing.
that's when you you just default on your dad.
Yeah.
Good. Russell, thank you very much. On that happy note, Russell, thank you very much. We're going to blow ourselves. We're going to leave out a suicide.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, S&P futures up 6. The S&P's up 51. We are going to get a record today, probably in the S&P, so we got that to look forward to. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.